Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Teachers Association, reminding everyone that students of all grade levels do better when families are involved in their education. Information on how to help children succeed is available at cta.org. The Wesley Foundation, for coverage of immigration issues throughout California. And the California Healthcare Foundation and Cal Hospital Compare, rating hospital quality in California. On the web at calhospitalcompare.org.
From KQED Public Radio, this is the California Report. Coming up, a look behind the balloons and speeches at the Republican convention, and how a middle school in North Hollywood made an unexpected appearance at the GOP gathering.
Permission to use the front of our school for the convention was not given by our school, nor is this use of our school's picture an endorsement of any political party.
Also going green in L.A., how a city known for cars and smog hopes to become a model for energy efficiency. And on the North Coast, can mushrooms really help solve a serious environmental problem?
If it works, this is going to make history, not only for Fort Bragg, but for the world, because so many people are facing this similar problem.
I'm Scott Schaefer, and this is the California Report. They're striking the sets in St. Paul, and the McCain-Palin ticket is off and running. Our John Meyer spent the past few days with California's delegation at the Republican National Convention. He offers this look at a week that was part media spectacle, part political ritual, and part sleepover camp for gleeful GOP partygoers from all over the Golden State.
If you were anywhere near the California delegation on Thursday night, you couldn't miss them. The two men, not old, but also not that young, were wearing cartoonish, oversized Uncle Sam hats, and they were loving every minute of the Grand Ole Party's party in St. Paul.
Last night we were on TV because we were wearing the hats that kept focusing on us. All of our friends
almost every TV station had us at one time.
Tobin Brinker of San Bernardino and Doug Britton of Fireball were two of the 173 official delegates representing California at the Republican National Convention. And the big Uncle Sam hats, $10. They bought them in Minneapolis. But the best part, they didn't even know each other 4 days ago.
We met first night, and we've been hanging out all week long. I've met so many good people, but Doug's going to be a lifelong friend. I mean, we've just had a great time.
My wife laughed at me because she goes, oh, just like camp, you buddied up with somebody.
Yeah, just like kids going to camp.
Yeah, kids going to camp. We've had a good time.
A lot of delegates seem to be having a good time.
Oh, my God, it's wonderful. It's fabulous.
Lorette Mayo is an investment manager from Los Gatos, and like so many of her fellow delegates, attending her first convention.
I am just in my glory here. This has been a dream come true for me. I am a political maniac.
Are you really?
Yes, I am.
California's delegation was the largest of any state, and there's only one official duty for delegates, formally casting a vote for the party's ticket. It's a carefully choreographed process.
You're right after Arkansas. Yeah, we're after Arkansas, so that cameraman will place himself here, and then we'll go.
Delegate John Pashong from Atascadero works for the McCain campaign and served as the coordinator Wednesday night. Wearing a red McCain hat and an earpiece, he was the one who gave California Chairman Bill Jones the signal to make it official.
California has presented great leaders to this nation, such as President Ronald Reagan. Proudly cast its 173 votes for the next president of the United States, John McCain.
As you might know, California brought not only delegates but alternate delegates. In other words, if a delegate couldn't be here one night or for some other important function, an alternate delegate would be able to come down and sit in their place. You would think that alternate delegates probably were unhappy about that until you were here in the Excel Center and you saw where the alternate delegates get to sit. They're sitting front and center, great seats for the stage, while the California delegation, the actual delegates, are sitting far off to the side.
The alternates have better seats, so you can be sure that I will be sitting in my lesser seat watching Senator McCain in about an hour.
John Fleischman, an alternate from Orange County, did make his way to the red carpeted floor for a while Thursday night. The California floor seats were, as one delegate joked, way far left, just like their home state. As it turned out, the only real inconvenience to the convention may have been the transportation.
The two official hotels for the delegation were in the Minneapolis suburb of Bloomington, and the daily bus ride was anything but predictable.
You never know if you're going to be on a bus that's going to take you to your destination in 20 minutes or 40 minutes or an hour and a half.
Jane Hamm, a real estate developer from Cupertino, said she and other delegates at first thought the bus drivers were lost. They weren't. Local police and federal officials had mapped out bus routes far off the beaten path as a security precaution. But given the huge radius of city streets blocked off by police, Hamm and others didn't even know there was a problem.
We look on TV and there's demonstrations, but we're so sealed up in here, we only see that on TV. We don't really know where that's happening.
Delegates found themselves invited to a number of free events, both before and after the formal convention meetings. But getting to the Twin Cities was pricey. Delegates paid their way, paid for their hotel rooms, and paid a $900 fee per person to help cover other expenses. But it's hard to imagine anyone complained. Tobin Brinker, one half of the inseparable duo of crazy hat-wearing delegates, said he's going to put the big event to good use. After all, he's a middle school teacher.
My students are going to love this. You know, I've got pictures of it. I hope some of them saw me on TV. You know,
you almost can do like a civics lesson with them when you get back.
That's the plan. I've got all these pictures. We're going to make a slideshow. We're going to talk about the process and what happened. Should be a lot of fun.
For the California Report, I'm John Myers at the Republican National Convention in St. Paul.
And you can see John's slideshow from the RNC and watch his videos, read his blog from the convention. They're all right there on our website, californiareport.org. One last note about that convention. If you saw any close-ups of John McCain on TV Thursday night, you may have noticed him standing in front of what looked like a big green wall.
In my life, no success has come without a good fight. And this nomination wasn't any different. That's a tribute to the candidate.
Well, turns out it was actually a huge lawn, part of an image projected on the screen behind him. And Googling detectives have determined it was, in fact, a picture of Walter Reed Middle School in North Hollywood. We wanted to know what the school thought of their moment in the political spotlight, so we called them up. They referred us to LA Unified spokeswoman Monica Carrazzo.
Permission to use the front of our school for the convention was not given by our school, nor is this use of our school's picture an endorsement of any political party or view. It was first brought to our attention this morning when the principal called us. Like everyone else, it's caught us all by surprise.
Now, your school has been used for a number of, of course, you're in Hollywood, so it makes a certain amount of sense, but it's been used in a number of TV shows and movies and that kind of thing, has it not?
Oh, yes, it's a beautiful school. It's used on numerous car commercials. I see it a lot during the evening when I'm watching TV. It's a very beautiful school. The front of the school is very nice.
Now, there's, of course, Walter Reed is also the name of a medical hospital, an Army hospital in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. And there's some speculation that maybe the RNC confused that image with the image of your school. I mean, do you have any sense of whether that may have actually happened?
We're asking the same questions as everyone else, too.
Who are you asking the questions of?
We're asking the questions, amongst ourselves here and the staff and, to the school, to the community.
Is it a source of pride, would you say, that the RNC used your school?
It's a very pretty school. Why was it picked up, whether it be by accident or on purpose? I don't know if we'll ever know, but it's a beautiful school.
And this little thing becomes part of the school history, I guess.
It could be. You're right.
It's already on Wikipedia.
Yes, I've seen a couple of the media hits myself on Google, so I've been one of those people clicking away as well.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for your time, Scott.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye. Monica Carrazzo is a spokeswoman for the L.A. Unified School District.
When some loud bragger tries to put me down and says this school is great, I tell him right away, now what's the matter, buddy? Ain't you heard of my school? It's number one in the state.
Hey, hey, take it away. Get
so
be
proud of your school.
It's hard to believe that the Beach Boys recorded that song 45 years ago. The surf, sand, and sun that they sang about helped create a vision of California that lives on today. Well, now former Beach Boy Brian Wilson is back with a new release called That Lucky Old Sun. As the California Report's pop music critic Steve Hockman explains, it's a welcome look at the state of the state and at the man who helped shape its seductive image.
There are so many familiar scenes and references in Brian Wilson's new album, it's hard to pick any one as the key. Near the end of this ambitious, if sometimes patchy, song cycle, there's this line from the song Southern California.
I had this dream, singing with my brothers in harmony.
In the Beach Boys, he did live the dream of harmonizing with his brothers, Carl and Dennis, even though their family life was anything but harmonious, and even if that dream is now framed by sorrow and loss, with both his brothers gone. And then there's this from Going Home.
At 25, I turned out the light, 'cause I couldn't handle the glare in my tired eyes, but now I'm back, drawing shades of kind blue sky.
Anyone who knows Wilson's story knows how in his mid-20s, the boy genius pulled away from the fun facade and retreated, to paraphrase another old song of his, in his room to a sunless life of drugs and depression. Throughout the album, with lyrics largely by longtime Wilson band member Scott Bennett, there's that balance of joy, the endless summer ode forever she'll be my surfer girl, and introspection, the life goes on contemplation of midnight's another day. That Lucky Old Sun is nothing less than a California oratorio. It's a drive with the top down to revisit the places and people of his youth. There is that surfer girl on the beach, the Hollywood hopefuls, the Capitol Records Tower and the Hollywood Bowl, sites of his own triumphs. Another old friend turns up in the person of Van Dyke Parks, who first collaborated with Wilson in the 60s and here wrote five short narrative bits tying the scenes together. But the real key may well be this line from the song that Wilson himself has said is the most autobiographical, most revealing on this collection.
Oxygen, oxygen, right to the brain. Skip the vices, verses, get to the refrain. Let yourself float, don't carry that way. Never destroy when you can create. Ready, set in California. I'm filling up my lungs again.
Oxygen to the brain, while not exactly the most poetic words he's ever sung, tells us exactly where he's at. He seems juiced by renewed activity and acclaim of the past decade, having returned to the stage regularly for the first time since the mid-60s, and in 2004 completing the 40 Years in the Making Smile, one of the legendary lost albums of rock lore. The re-energized Wilson dove into a follow-up intended to have similar scope, at least structurally, not just to Smile, but to 1966's Pet Sounds, a perennial feature of best album ever debates.
Lucky Wilson, Lucky Wilson.
It's strange, perhaps, that the song that provides the title and recurring motif is a 1949 lament in which the singer longs to be like that lucky old son and do nothing but roll around heaven all day. Energized, but still fighting a lazy streak. Well, Wilson, like many great artists, is full of contradictions. Now, this falls shy of great art, but it has at least one thing over the Smile reconstruction. That was meant to be sung by a man in his 20s, not in his 60s. That lucky old sun is Brian Wilson meeting today's sunrise.
But that lucky old sun's got nothing to do but rule around heaven all day. Show me that river, take me across, wash all my troubles away. Whilst that lucky old sun's got nothing to do but rule around heaven all day.
Steve Hockman writes the weekly global music column Around the World for Spinner.com. He reviewed That Lucky Old Sun by Brian Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to get your reviews of what you hear on our show. Send your comments or story ideas to us at calreport@kqed.org. That's calreport@kqed.org. And if you missed something or want to tell your friends about something you did hear, our website is the place to go. It's californiareport.org. Again, that's californiareport.org. Have you noticed how corporations, politicians, even cities are wrapping themselves in green these days to kind of polish their environmental credibility? Even L.A., a city with crowded freeways and a polluting past, is dreaming of a future with green jobs for its poorest residents, all of them working together to save the environment. Well, it may sound like a feel-good Coca-Cola commercial from the 1970s, but as Los Angeles Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports, that's exactly what L.A. is planning, with a series of new laws to require more energy-efficient buildings.
Three stories underneath downtown Los Angeles, cars descend into the West Coast's oldest underground parking garage. The city built the Pershing Square Garage in the 1950s when energy was abundant and cheap. City of LA's Dan Eason shows off a relic from that period.
We're headed down into some of the exhaust fan rooms right now where it takes basically the exhaust from the parking structure and exhaust it to the outside.
The two-story room looks like a coal mine. Its walls are black from decades of car exhaust. If the city of Los Angeles had a ceiling, this is what it would look like. Eason descends the stairs to inspect the 10-foot turbine. It looks like a giant box fan.
When these were built, the technology that was available is what you currently see. You know, turn them on, let them exhaust.
Simple instructions for simpler times. This old clunker will be one of the first things to be replaced, says Eason, once Los Angeles approves an ordinance that would retrofit hundreds of city-owned buildings to meet new, strict energy efficiency standards. Nancy Sutley is the LA Deputy Mayor for Energy and Environment.
We have a history here in Los Angeles of pushing the environmental envelope, and then I think what you have right now in Los Angeles is a mayor who's, you know, made part of his legacy to make Los Angeles the greenest big city in the United States.
With LA's reputation as smog capital of the U.S., this may seem hard to believe, but she's not kidding. Earlier this year, LA became the first big city in the country to require all new large commercial buildings to meet strict nationally recognized environmental standards. Under the new ordinance, the city would retrofit 500 city structures. LA is targeting buildings because their energy needs account for almost half of all greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. Sutley says one of the goals is to serve as a model for the private sector. But economist Jack Kaiser of the LA County Economic Development Corporation says the timing couldn't be worse for expensive building retrofits, no matter how green they are.
It's going to be difficult because the next 2 years are going to be very rough for the economy. They will pay attention, but it's not something that they're going to jump into immediately.
But a slow economy doesn't seem to be stopping LA's quest to clean up its smog. LA was the first U.S. city to commit to reducing its greenhouse gases by 20% from 1990 levels within 2 years. By 2030, the city plans to reduce greenhouse gases an additional 15%. Teresa Sanchez, spokeswoman for the Service Employees International Union, wonders who will benefit from the new jobs that will be created.
We have to move to renewable fuels and green technologies, and we know that there's a lot of activity in terms of developing that industry, but there's not a lot of work being done in looking at the quality of jobs. So we're investing a lot of time and thought into how do we link those two things together, the industry of the future and the jobs of the future.
LA's plan to retrofit city buildings includes measures that would create up to 500 so-called green-collar jobs, union jobs whose work will include updating lighting systems, installing solar panels, low-flow toilets, and California-friendly landscaping. The ordinance would also ensure many of these new workers come from neighborhoods with high unemployment.
Number 89, this is so much of a dispatch window, please. Number 89, this is so much of a dispatch window.
This is all good news for electricians standing outside their union's dispatch hall in South L.A. waiting to be called up for a job. A slump in home and commercial construction means rising unemployment. In response, the local chapter of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers has begun training its members to install solar panels. Apprentice Chris Lucier was so enlightened by the training that he immediately bought solar panels off of eBay and installed them in his backyard.
Now I have no electric bill, and my meter actually is averaging out to be running backwards every day. So I'm actually going back maybe, 10 or 12 numbers a day. And that's really nice, because if I ever decide to run a lot of power on something, I got all that reserve.
Lucier's solar awakening introduced him to a whole new green industry, an industry Lucier hopes will revive a depressed economy and create a new workforce. For the California Report, I'm Rob Schmitz in Los Angeles.
There's a different kind of environmental challenge on the North Coast. Ever since a huge redwood mill closed in Fort Bragg 6 years ago, the Mendocino County town has been figuring out what to do with the 3+ miles of rocky coastline where the mill was. Here's the problem. The land is contaminated with dioxin. Last week, the Fort Bragg City Council approved a plan to clean it up, a plan that warmed the hearts of organic food boosters. Lisa Morehouse has more.
When two huge buildings on the site of the old mill were torn down in late July, they revealed something the residents weren't used to.
There are people who live in Fort Bragg who've never seen their coast.
Marie Jones is the city's community development director. A third of the total area of Fort Bragg, and nearly all of the coastline, has been off limits to the public for decades. First, because of the mills. Later, because of the pollution they left behind. And even now, those glimpses of the ocean are taking place through a chain-link fence, since the carcinogen dioxin was found on the site 2 years ago.
Dioxin is a scary word. I mean, the only word that's scarier than dioxin is radioactive, I think. It's a very scary word, and I think the fear is completely understandable.
There are two approved options for dealing with soil contaminated with dioxin. Dig it up and haul it away, or wrap it in plastic and pour concrete on top. Fort Bragg City Council has decided on a combination plan where the dirt will be moved away from the ocean, wrapped and buried inland, and capped with concrete. But they have also approved an unusual experiment to take some of the contaminated soil and try detoxifying it naturally using mushrooms or mycelium.
Well, mycelium are simply the roots of the fungi going through the soil.
Jerry Mello is a city council member and former forester with Georgia Pacific.
Dioxins, these chemical compounds, are held together by very tight chemical bonds. And there is a person, Dr. Paul Stamets from the state of Washington, who believes that using fungi, that is the plants that make mushrooms, will tend to break that down. And he wants to try it. And my response is, jump right on it.
The mycelium proposal is a type of bioremediation, the practice of using natural processes to clean up pollution. Its advocates point to the success of other forms of bioremediation already being used at the Fort Bragg site. Petroleum produced the most contamination at the old mill. Now, Georgia Pacific is using bioremediation to treat it. Here, where people once stored fuel and serviced trucks, the cleanup is in process. The soil is being excavated, treated with water and nutrients, and tilled to add oxygen. Naturally occurring bacteria eat the petroleum and clean the soil.
There's a social benefit. This is a better, more environmentally green technology.
Bridget DeShields is a scientist with Arcadis, an environmental consulting firm contracting with Georgia Pacific at the former mill site.
It's also cost savings, though. We're 190 miles from the closest landfill. We're saving about $1 million on just this year alone doing this work in this manner instead of trucking it offsite.
A clean site increases the resale potential for Georgia-Pacific, too, and fuels big dreams in Fort Bragg. Some want to see an eco-industrial park and community gardens. Others advocate for a power plant. There's a proposed center for the study of oceans and forests, and a hotel and convention center. Housing and open space are on almost everybody's wish list.
I am sad to see it go because it was a critical part of our economy here, I believe.
But looking out over the coast, former mill worker and plant supervisor Paul Johnson explains what he thinks the site won't house.
I don't think you'll ever see a mill site here again. The property has too many other uses, I believe, and maybe too much of a history.
Jim Tarbell, who's active in a citizen group planning for the site, says it's not just about replacing one set of buildings with another.
We're moving from the extraction economy to the restoration economy, and that means restoring the earth, restoring the local economy, and restoring a community to all that it has been and can be in the future.
And in a few years, the town will be able to show off some of the most spectacular coastline in the state.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. We're going to beat the hell out of Monterey and Santa Cruz. We're going to have a much better oceanfront than they are.
Even Jerry Mello, who describes himself as the most conservative council member, voted in favor of the mushroom testing. But he's eager to see development start.
I'd like to see the site cleaned up. I don't care how they do it.
The mycelium experiment's most ardent advocates know there are major questions about how it will work. But activist Thais Mazur, like other residents, believes a positive result would have implications beyond Fort Bragg.
We need to see the science of mycelium remediation before it can be used out in the field on the Georgia Pacific mill site. But if it works, this is going to make history, not only for Fort Bragg, but for the world, because so many people are facing this similar problem.
For the California Report, I'm Lisa Morehouse in Fort Bragg.
Lisa took some photos of the Fort Bragg coastline, and you can see them at our website, californiareport.org. That's our show for today. The California Report is a production of KQED Public Radio. The director is Nina Thorson. Tom Krimkowski is the technical producer. We had additional engineering from Howard Gelman, Seal Muller, and Danny Bringer. Our interns are Dan Verrill, Alexis Kenyon, and Amanda Stupai. The online editor is Gabriel Cohen. Our producer is Susie Rocho. Dan Brecky was a contributing editor. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. The executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. The California Endowment, working to build healthier communities that support children, youth, and families. Online at calendow.org. And Osh Complete Home and Garden, offering service and selection to Californians for over 75 years. Ideas, tips, and solutions at osh.com.